Hello and welcome to another edition of Tech Wrap. We're up to episode 15.
The big 1-5. Wow, 1-5. Goes quick.
Hello, Will.
Hey, how are you?
I think I'm all right.
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. Hey, happy 30th birthday, Windows.
I hadn't even realised that.
Yeah, it's Windows
30 years.
Yep, 1985 is when Windows 1.0 came out, or 1.0, if we want to be all technical. 1.0 Windows, and 1985, now it is 2015, that is.
And it was a very interesting model back then.
I mean, the earliest Windows that I got on was
3.1?
Yeah, probably 3.1, I guess. Yeah.
I was 3.1 because I was introduced to computers at a later stage of my life. I didn't actually see computers until primary school. We didn't have a computer at home.
No, we didn't either. So I think it was at my dad's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was running. So it was like coming to visit and it was Windows 3.1. And now I jumped on the old Missile Command.
Oh, yeah.
One of the few games. Minesweeper and Missile Command, I think, with a... And Solitaire, of course.
My introduction to
Staples.
My introduction to computing was an Osborne computer running Windows 3.1 at school. We used to get about half an hour of computer time, but I used to always point out to the teachers that they weren't giving me the half an hour of time because they used to say, oh, you've had enough already. And it's like, no, it hasn't been half an hour yet.
That thing will rot your brain. It'll serve no use in the future. Get back to reading these books.
We had
learning about algebra.
We had a dial-up internet as well there, so we were able to sort of have a look at, you know, the early web pages back then and get into it.
I think actually, I don't know how, but like I must like less, I don't know, tiny like a baby. I remember must have been that young, but it was like it was one of the computers where you had to program games to play them. So you had to it was like a book of games you had and they were all in basic programming language.
Oh, yeah.
So you had to, you follow along with the book and you'd program the game before you could play,
play it. Yeah. And then you play it.
I don't know what that was. I think it might have been just like DOS or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
There was
that's all I remember, that being hilarious.
There's some very rudimental computing devices before the age of Windows. You know, things you plugged into the TV and little keyboard-based devices like the Sinclair computer. You know, I've seen a few of them around and I've sort of marveled at what they are now because I didn't get to appreciate them when I was younger. But you know, I'm kind of glad that...
There's not much to appreciate. Those old computers, like Windows 1 required 2 floppy disks and 258 kilobytes of memory.
And look what room it's taken up now.
Did I say 258? I meant 256.
256?
Yeah.
And what was that statement that Bill Gates used to say? Oh, you'll only need
I'm
so
not
much
gay.
RAM. Huh?
Steve Jobs is... No. What? Is that what he said?
No, the one about memory. You'll only ever need so much memory, and then, you know, it's like gone, you know, hundredfold or something.
Yeah.
You know, I've got...
Silly Bill Gates, what does he know?
I've got 16 gig of RAM in my computer.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm running Windows 7, so I can't use all of it, but it's there, and everything runs perfect because it's there.
You'll never need more than 16 gigabytes, guaranteed.
For another 10 years.
Oh, 5 years.
There's been a lot going on in tech in the last couple of fortnight. Well, few weeks, I guess.
What's piquing your interest? What have you seen come across your desk?
One thing that happened was the iPad Pro release.
iPad Pro. You're an Apple fan?
Yes.
Did you buy one?
No.
Oh.
I don't have a need for it. You see, I've sort of gone around the various models of Apple things. I've had a MacBook Pro. I've had various iPhones. I had the original iPad. I had about an iPad 3 or 4 models up from that.
Really?
After I thought I was sick of the original iPad. And then I decided... after using the iPad for a little while, that it wasn't working for what I was doing because I do a bit of remote support as well as, you know, standard tasks. And on iOS, you just don't have everything you need in an easy-to-use function. Like, well, maybe not easy to use, but like a more advanced sort of, I guess, way of going about you know, controlling it, operating it.
So you got a like, Surface. Is that when you got your Surface?
I went to a MacBook Pro then.
Oh.
And I got
nothing but Apple is all I'm hearing.
And after that, after a few years with that, it was only to try it out and see what I thought of it because I'd always just discounted Macs completely. But after that, you know, I kind of thought, well, it's none of this is working for me very well. I think I'm going to just go back to Windows again. And of course, the Surface tablet came around, beautiful. And it was in its third variant, so it was a bit more refined than it previously had been. And I thought, well, beauty, I'll go this way. And I mean, this thing runs a full version of Windows, so
what more do you need? And it's so portable and handy.
Yeah, and you know, you can use it like a keyboard, so, like a keyboard laptop, or you can take that off and just use it like a tablet. And you
so Microsoft got ahead of the game with all their stuff. Big reveals and their new Surface Pros and Surface Books and stuff. Mm. And now we see the Apple iPad Pro.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
doesn't the iPad seem Pro to have made as big of a splash.
It hasn't made as big of a splash. I think it all comes down to the fact that does the market really want it?
Yeah, I know.
At
like,
the
what,
moment,
is it just a bit? Does everything your iPad does so, just a little bit faster?
A little bit faster. It's a little bit bigger, so it's a larger unit than they previously
bulky.
Have been. Yeah, bulky. If you need accessories, they're expensive. So we're talking the Apple Pencil is $165.
What?
On top of, say, the cheapest model iPad is a 32-gig Wi-Fi, and that's $1,249. But if you need the keyboard, if you need the keyboard, that is $269. So
I don't know what, unbelievable. Who, I have no words. Who's buying this?
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen. I've only seen tech reviews with them so far. I have not seen too many average punters with them.
They get the model for free to try out.
Look, comparing it to the current Surface, the Surface Pro 3, and also I think just the Surface 3 itself. When with those, you might spend $1,500, but you get the pen included. It's not an extra charge.
Mm. Although with the new Surface Pros, they have the limited battery life, and you have to replace
That's not so great. This one I can actually undo and change both batteries inside it. Oh, I must admit, one of the batteries is difficult to get to because it's underneath another screw in the cap.
But it's doable.
But it's doable. You can fix it. And the keyboard. I got a good deal on the keyboard. The keyboard can be up to $120.
Jeez, which still is still cheaper than the pencil.
It's cheaper than the pencil and it's cheaper than the keyboard.
A lot cheaper. You can get two of Surface keyboards for that.
So I got the Surface keyboard for about $90 because I talked my way down. And so it's still a reasonable price compared to what Apple wants to charge for that limited device that they've got.
So you haven't had a chance to have a play with one at all?
No, I haven't even gone looking for them around town yet. I might.
So is that US that came out last week?
No, that's Australian dollars.
Okay. Like in America it came out last week. So
it came out everywhere pretty much.
Well, I might have to try and find one to have a bit of a play.
Might be able to have a look at one.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's one.
I won't be getting one.
One big thing. No, I won't be getting one either. I will not be getting one at all, you know. I can't see any need for it.
No need. Just get, like, if you just want to use it to watch.
Can't afford it.
Wait, what's the market there? Like, just productivity business people?
Yeah, it's like that. It's like an easy-to-use tablet, but it's larger.
But you can buy just, like, any sort of, like a cheap Samsung tablet or whatever for, like, $400 if you just wanted $400 or $500, you just watch movies and TV shows.
$1,699 for a 128 gigabyte 4G model. You are close to a top of the line laptop with that sort of
money. I'd rather go for a Surface Book.
I would go for a top of the line laptop, not an iPad Pro.
No. Well, there we go. We won't be getting them.
No joys for iPad Pro. No. I must say there's joys for being on the Telstra network.
I am not, so I'll be closing my ears now.
So in the last couple of months, and they've just released the details in the last in early November, they've been doing some data testing on their 4GX network, just internally, not using the internet.
What
as
does
such.
The X stand for?
extended.
Extra speed.
Yeah, extra speed, extended, something along that line. It's just marketing. It's
Telstra Extra.
More eggs in your speed.
Plus.
Yeah.
Telstra XXX.
So the tests that they've conducted through their network have determined that they can get the same as fibre speeds.
That's absolutely incredible.
Through the network. 100 megabit.
That's insane.
At least it shows that once they've finally rolled the network out to more places, it's actually going to be able to keep up with things as long as they do, like capacity upgrades to each of the towers for the life of the equipment, rather than, you know, spending 5 years up there and then they're going to just swap it out for something else like they've done with 2G to 3G and 3G to 4G.
This is really cool tech for people in kind of like broadcast industry, whether it be like television or news, even radio, I guess, that you could be using these insane speeds to feed back like high resolution pictures in real time.
I didn't even consider that.
Stuff like that. Because I know what they used to do with those news broadcasts when they just had to get, when they were trying to get an uplink.
Yeah.
They have a device where they synchronize like three or four phones and then combines all the speeds to get that, the bandwidth required. So now you could just do that with like one phone.
Yeah.
And so that's, I'm thinking that side of things is really cool. Cause I'm thinking the average consumer, firstly, what are you going to do with that much speed? And you're going to blaze through your data limit in like 2 days.
Not even that.
What?
Not even that. I've done data testing on the Optus network and I've been able to burn 500 megabytes in a matter of 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, but like, was that because of the test though?
Or? It was testing.
Yeah, so that's a bit.
But if you're
watching like YouTube videos or streaming or music or whatever, you're going to be getting like the highest resolution content because your speed's so good.
You only need a 4K video and you've burned half your data.
So what are they going to do? Like, what's the point of having these files outside the people that are in the like the broadcast sort of world that don't care about data limits because they have endless funds? But for everyday people, it's cool to go that fast, but it's still the data limit restriction.
Are you asking how it's going to benefit?
You still have four gig data.
It's more of a network longevity sort of situation. You know, they've tested that it can handle these data rates. So if there is a need to do these data rates through any part of the network, it can actually
keep up to it. More people using the network, it'll be able to keep a consistent, strong bandwidth across
people
as well.
That'd be the question, because a lot of the time the network cells just can't hack having X amount of users on it.
Even if you get the same speeds you are now on Telstra 4G.
Whether you'll get them in the future
if you're in a really big area, you'd lose a bit of speed, but with the 4GX, you'd keep that consistent speed.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know.
We'll have to talk to some Telstra people.
We might be able to do that. Mm-hmm. Just as an example, around here near our workplace, we're less than a kilometre from a Telstra tower. And in the time that I've been working here and the time that they've had 4G switched on, and this even includes trial periods, my best speed was during the trial period when a lot of people didn't have these whiz-bang handsets that could do 4G.
Yeah.
I used to get about 60 meg down or up. I think it might have been up.
What are you getting these days?
It's about 30 down,
half.
30 something down. So, well, it was last time I checked. But, you know, given the amount that you can burn through doing speed tests, I am cautious about speed testing sometimes.
You have a lot of data this month, I think.
The average speed test on the 4G network is about 110 meg. And that is, like, it's nothing
of email checking.
It's nothing when you've got 8 gig of data.
Are you on 8 gig this month, are you?
I am on 8 gig this month. So I had a little thing go on last month where I'd
That's a lot. That's like,
I'd apparently managed to use 10 gig last month.
What were you doing?
I assisted a community station to broadcast an event, and that took 1.6.
Via your phone.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about.
Via my shared data pack.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you know, OBs and things like this.
But I don't know where the rest of it come. So now I'm going to just do the speed test because we've got onto the topic anyway.
Yeah, let's see. And
we're going to see what the network speeds are up at the moment.
I'm going to not do mine because I don't want to embarrass any companies.
I've got to say it's overly consistent on my whole journey from here to home. And even, it's improved.
I guarantee you that mine will never be.
No. So, final figure on download is 55 megabit.
Yeah, wow.
And upload is a healthy 36 megabit.
So I might get about 10. It's incredible that these speeds over mobile network is way faster than connections.
My ADSL connection.
So why can't we just have internet at home 10. Via this method and not being charged exorbitant data fees?
Well, that's it. That's where it doesn't happen because they don't want to provide these sort of
connections.
They wouldn't be able to handle it. I do remember a few years ago when Telstra was offering consumers more so in their Telstra stores if they were outside of an ADSL connection, the chance to jump on this wireless. And a lot of the cells just weren't hacking the amount of simultaneous connections during periods. And I know because I live out on a bit of land, you're near
sheep.
You're near farmers.
And cows.
Yes, cows.
Do you like sheep?
And horses. They're good to eat.
Lamb.
But yeah, you talk to farmers and they'd go, oh, you know, I don't go on the internet at
8 o'clock. Have some vegetarians complain.
Yeah. I don't go on the internet at 8 o'clock in the morning or 7 o'clock at night because that's when the kids are on and, you know, the kids slow the whole network down. So,
yeah. Going to be on at like 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. peak speeds.
It's just ridiculous. So
get on board Telstra. Is that what you're saying?
No, I didn't say that. I just said Telstra has a future-proof network. So if you're keen on looking at Telstra, and look...
When can we expect that be a rollout of the 4GX? Then?
4GX has already gone to a few major centres. The area we live in is enabled. It's just expanding towards other areas. So
like, we automatically be upgrade, like it'll, or you automatically go onto the 4GX?
Yes.
Like, it's the new thing now.
Yeah.
So 4G is not a thing now anymore. It's 4X.
It's 4G and 4GX, but 4GX is a marketing term for another frequency. It uses multiple frequencies.
Oh, they love that, don't they?
Yeah, and just as an example, in the 75 to 80 kilometre radius from here, like on my journey heading north, they've actually enabled about 3 towers going north. So you get 4G coverage, enough to get a few bars right the way through, and it's consistent and it's fast.
So you watch Netflix on your drive home.
If you're not in the driver's seat.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, this is a cool thing that I saw over the past week that it kind of was like, wow, that's kind of cool, but maybe not.
Maybe not so cool.
It's a bit of a fad. I don't know. I liked it. It's the Atmo Tube.
The what?
Atmo Tube.
Atmo Tube.
It's a tiny pollution sensor.
Yeah,
it tells you like how polluted the environment is. So it has this little device.
Yeah,
it hooks up to your smartphone and it will rate the air quality using all its onboard sensors and tell you how toxic the air you're breathing is. So
do you really want to know in some cases?
Yeah, exactly right. So like, I think they're doing some testing like over in China and stuff, and it was so it gives it a number from 0 to 100. Mm-hmm. I think 100 is the best, like in terms of quality, like 100% quality.
You wouldn't want zero.
And towards zero is you're dead, pretty much. You're on Mars.
Toxic.
If you get zero, yes.
Yes.
And I think they're in like testing in China and wherever they were, it was about like 50.
Jeez.
So it's like on your keychain, it's like this little device. And then reads out onto your smartphone like a sensor. Here, I'll show you a picture. It's like almost like a little black sort of whistle.
Oh yeah, so it's not overly.
And it's got like these holes vulnerable. On the top, and it. So I think it's a cool little thing that you just like check your smartphone. Like, I wonder how good the air I'm breathing is. But there's not much you can do if you.
No kinda, good. Get inside.
It's like you work in your office and your air quality is terribly. Like, boss, I got to get that room with a view, that window. Got to get some plants in here.
I reckon there is a few of those workplaces.
And you can do like, oh, it'll sync with everyone else that has one, and they can draw up maps and stuff. So you can sort of see if you get enough data where the nicest bits in the country are to live, where the places to stay away are. So that's it was an Indiegogo project, and it's going for about $79. And I kind of want one.
And is this project going to go through? You might have known the news that there's been so many. So many of these crowdfunding failures.
Well, I saw like a drone one. Like it was that drone raised like $3.2 million for this drone or something like that, and then they just go under. Like, how's that even possible?
Yeah. What are they doing with the money?
It's definitely like, you got to be so careful. Yeah, there's been a trend lately of people raising like, it's not even like little projects, like getting a couple hundred bucks and then failing. It's like projects that are raising millions of dollars.
And they're just disappearing,
And then because it's like your donation, if you pledged $100 to get the first prototype or something, because it flops, you don't get anything. You get nothing.
Or the people just go,
incredible.
Oh, here's the design. You can have a piece of the design.
Yeah,
they'll release it
for free and stuff. Like, but people feel, because they feel like they're buying it. Like,
yeah.
If you contribute $200 and they're like, okay, we'll give you one of the first off the production line. That's pretty much buying for the product or pre-ordering, but it's not, it's dodgy.
I feel compelled to be getting a product if I'm putting so much money in and they're saying, when we do release a project, you're getting this.
It's got to be so careful with what you donate to, whether it be Kickstarter or Indiegogo or any other crowdsourcing crowdfunding website.
I just hope this doesn't tarnish the other side of the crowdfunding side of things. Like, there's crowdfunding websites which support charities and those sort of things. And I'm hoping that does not,
rub people up the wrong way. If anyone was doing the charity one, they'd be like, maybe it went under, but it went to charity, so it's all good. This way, like, it just goes to some scumbags who lost all your money and gave you nothing for it. So I think it's very different.
And sold off their assets and went to another country. And
I wonder. I reckon our air quality here would be pretty good.
I reckon our air quality is not bad at all. Living in a regional city, we're away from all that sort of
rubbish. We're going to live at least a month longer, I reckon, than people in the city.
Let's continue talking about health.
Yes.
And we'll talk about
it's a good thing to have.
A piece of software that can run on Android. And just think back a decade or two
only
ago.
Only Android?
At the moment. It's plus think back a couple
Android.
Of decades ago. We would have never entertained the idea that our mobile phones could be more capable than some of our computers. And then have a think about, the amount of people that are being troubled by cancer and how the disease is on the rise here in Australia. And research is continuing, but there's only so many people out there that can do the research. And it takes them time to get the work done as well.
Yes.
You might remember a project called SETI, which was exploring extraterrestrial activity. And what it did is it allowed home users to install a piece of software on their computer, use the internet to download the data, and then when they weren't using the computer, it would crunch numbers and then send it back.
And then there was another one also, AMD, I think, had one called Folding at Home.
Oh, yes, Folding at Home. I do remember that one as well.
Basically did a very similar thing.
And I was almost keen to set up a Folding at Home server at home at one stage, but I didn't have very good computers and I didn't have very good network connections.
We should set them up here on all the work machines. We'll get a lot done, I reckon.
So what this project is from the Garvan Institute of Research, they combined with the Vodafone Foundation to make a smartphone app. And it essentially does like Folding at Home and SETI on your phone. So you, when you get home, you put it on Wi-Fi and you put it on charge. You open the app and it'll just download the data and start crunching away. So when you're not using it, it's being useful.
I'm paranoid enough, my smartphone being bogged down just by general apps, let alone an app designed to use up maximum resources. I'd be so paranoid all the time if that was like leaking or running in the background or didn't close properly. That would freak me out personally.
But
every time my phone runs slow or like lags a bit on the screen, is that? What's the app called?
It is called, I've lost it now. What is it called now? Oh, wow. Shit. What is it called?
Caught you out there, didn't I? I'll be like, that app slowing me down.
Dreamlab.
Dream Lab. So yeah, I'd always be kind of freaking out that Dream Lab was slowing my phone down.
It's only using the CPU time.
I'm paranoid.
It's only using the CPU time that you're not using.
And I worry about things. It'll have psychological implications causing me stress, and I'm more likely to get cancer that I need the app to help fix me. It's ironic.
You know the most amusing thing about this? It's currently only available on Android, but the screenshots on their website show iOS. They are getting to iOS.
Yeah, pretty sleek. You're pairing DreamLab, like a countdown timer to let you know how long you've been using it.
You know, I'd
like to see like a percent, like how much my phone has contributed to unlocking or cracking something, or if they set it up like a game sort of thing, like you're unlocking.
You play a game to unlock it.
Just something a little funny to make it more interactive and like a sense of achievement, you know, like have achievements in there like you've been. Maybe they do.
Maybe you could.
I should check it out.
Maybe you could provide some suggestions. You actually select what projects you're interested in being involved in. And then it downloads a small amount of data and crunches that data and then re-uploads it only while you're on Wi-Fi and only while you're in charge. So if you're not on either of those, it won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it'll just keep doing that progressively and contribute back. And they reckon if they get, what were they saying, around 10,000, 100,000 downloads, they will speed the data crunching of their projects up by 3,000 times, which is a fairly impressive.
So how many downloads?
100,000 they'd need to be able to.
They're at 10,000 at the moment.
That's not bad.
So 10 times the amount they have now.
That's not bad considering.
Rated 4.7 stars.
Oh, there you go. So it must be an all right app.
2,000 reviews.
You know, I'd actually forgotten I've got an Android phone at home. I've still got a Galaxy S2 or 3.
I don't think you'd help much with that phone.
Oh, surely it'd work.
You could try out the app, see how it goes. I'm just messing with you.
I'd be keen to give it a bit
we
of a
We so
go.
Easily dismiss phones that are only like 3-4 years old.
We do now. And the manufacturers do as well.
No, they can't help it. They implant it in our heads.
We're no longer supporting this phone. Go and buy a new one. And it's like, well, there's nothing much wrong
it's
with
old
it.
Old and slow. It and works. You should throw it away and buy our new phone.
It still makes calls and stuff. And I can download apps, but you don't let me download all of the apps anymore.
With just 1,000 users, DreamLab will process research data 30 times faster than what Garvin could do it without it.
The Garvin Research Institute, yeah.
30 times faster.
So that's a wonderful little heartwarming
idea. Yeah, get on board, download the app, try it out.
And one more,
I'll be doing that.
One more about body, just very quickly.
If we covered like mind, body, and we got to do something for soul.
Soul.
Yeah. Maybe play some music.
Maybe
on
you've got
Google
soul.
Music.
So we've got only about a week or so left on Movember.
Yes, I noticed.
I'm not growing.
Yeah, last year you were growing a mow.
Yes, I was growing last
Why
year.
Why are we not mowing a grow this month?
Mowing a grow.
Growing a mow this month.
Oh, I just opted not to
Why?
This year. It was easier not to.
That's the point. It's meant to be a challenge and stick it out. And you look so seedy with the mow. You should have done it next year.
You know what I never shared with anyone from last year?
Uh-oh.
I actually took a video of me getting rid of the mow as well.
Oh, mow shave.
Yeah, like an after and a shave off. Because
Did you do it like a little Hitler mow before you cleaned it off completely?
Nah. Previous years, I've actually been involved in things at work and we used to have a barbecue.
I haven't seen a lot of mows actually.
No.
Ooh, it's been a disappointing year for them.
We used to have a little final event downstairs out on the street that we promoted on the radio.
Come have some candy, kids.
We'd have a breakfast barbecue.
Oh, okay.
They'd have raised money for Movember, and then a barber had come over, and all the people that had been involved could come and get them shaved off.
Oh, that's awesome.
And they'd take photos and have the press over and all that sort of thing, and it was kind of like a nice little heartwarming end to Movember. But
now, I don't have a mow. You don't have a mow.
You've got
what
something.
What can people do if they do have a mow?
So they can go to mymustache.net. If they're not
your mustache.
My Mustache.
It's yours?
No, not mine. Okay. My Mustache. .net. And get a bit of appreciation for the mow they're growing.
Yes.
So you upload a photo.
There's nothing worse than your 29 days in and no one even notices your mow.
Or they just keep on commenting on about how crap they reckon it is, like they do
one
to
or
me.
The other.
They pick at me all the time.
So how can we solve this?
So a Microsoft Garage project, you might have seen howold.net if you're on Facebook and Twitter.
He could upload a picture of you and then it'd estimate your age.
Yep.
And we've seen some hilarious results.
Yeah, I got some pretty interesting ones as well. So you upload a picture of your mow and it gives you a rating on your mow.
That's a good mow. We're looking at one now.
That's a good one, but that's a stock picture. That's the only unfortunate thing.
Mo.
So it rates your mow based on no stash, which mine probably would.
It's the lowest rating.
Getting there or ultimate
Why
mo.
Why would you upload a picture of yourself without a stash to My Mustache?
Yeah. Okay. And it gives you a scale rating as well.
I wish you had one so we could do this for you and then post it on Twitter.
Surely there'd be someone around this building.
No, but we're not interested.
Hang on, you've got one.
No, I don't have a mo. We're not uploading my picture anyway.
I'm going to upload your picture on there.
It's not a mo. It's not a dedicated mo. It's just facial growth, like not shaving laziness. It's, to have a mo, you actually actively got to shave around the mo, so your mo is predominant.
You just can't be bothered doing that.
This is nothing, not doing anything, and it's what happens. So, mymustache.com.
No, mymustache.net. Mymustache.net.
That's great. I love that stuff. And what was that other one we were looking at? The emotional detection, where I think that was Microsoft as well.
Yes.
So, they're getting really on board to sort of booster up their like neural network or whatever to try and get recognition and all their AI stuff. Using all this data to make better and more efficient things. Who knows what they're up to? But
yeah, we were having a look at that on your
computer. You could upload a picture of you or your friend or anyone. Maybe it's a picture and you're not quite sure how they're feeling about it. Maybe you're like, oh, I wonder what he was feeling at my wedding. He doesn't look too happy, but what is he happy for me?
Yeah.
Maybe you're not sure. You could upload a picture of this guy and it would give you like a readout of how what it thought was going on in the picture. Like, was he angry, like neutral, happy? So it would give you like a happiness rating based on your face and your micro expressions, like in your eyes and your mouth and your nose and everything. And you could get like a data value of what anyone is feeling. So that's kind of interesting. But I think most of the time you kind of, you know if people are happy or not.
You can usually detect it.
It's like another bit of fun thing, but who knows what they'll use it for eventually.
And unfortunately, in some situations, I can show that as well. Like, you're not in a good mood and you just don't talk in a good mood and people know. And
you don't need to take a picture of you and then upload
stay
it
away
to
from me.
The facial recognition website to figure out how someone's feeling.
And be in their analytical data forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
That's good. It's for Google, so it's for good. Do no evil. Well,
you'd hope.
They can never do evil.
Oh, I don't know
about evil.
I don't know about that one.
Mm. Man, so lots of great stuff where you can just upload your face to.
Mm. Another big world event that's happened since we last sat down and did a podcast is the Paris terror attacks.
Yeah, terrible.
A terrible thing to happen, something you don't wish would happen to any human being, but, there are situations where it has happened over time and you can't...
All the time.
You can't change what has happened now, but it's great that technology has been able to play a bit of a part, in, aiding people in those situations. And it starts at the core of social media networks in the fact that, when this was going on inside a couple of venues, people were actually able to get on social media and post updates of what was going on during the attack or around the sites of the attacks. And it doesn't, it keeps going on beyond this. I'll touch back on Facebook in a sec. So after the incident, you had people wanting to try and help out in some way or another. So some of these websites became connection points. Airbnb contacted all the people who were offering properties around the area and said, hey, can you take in some stranded people?
Mm.
That's a nice thing to do. Yes. You had Uber do away with their surge pricing and then make sure there was enough vehicles around to be able to convey people away, given the fact that people would have feared chain of reaction events if they'd have gone on public transport. And they were being suggested by local authorities not to use public transport at the time, given you've seen like the London attacks and that sort of thing.
Yep.
People got onto buses and then the next event happened. And so, you know, the fear of being on those. So Uber was helping there. Google and Skype allowed free calling to those from other countries into
the area. Yeah, I believe like even most of the network providers.
Mobile networks in the US as well.
And here we're offering free calls as well over there.
So that people could contact those loved ones over there and see how they are, which is a wonderful deal. And hear them, and hear them even.
Yes.
And then, of course, Facebook did activate its emergency incidents thing, the tagging.
I didn't
the
even know
service.
This was a thing until this happened. And I
you weren't aware of it?
I was never aware of this. I was like, oh, that's a really cool feature.
They turned that on a year ago
first time. And then you said they've had it for a year. I'm like, what? No way. So it's like it says, are you safe or are you okay or something, right? So it pops up. Is that how it's
Yeah, like? Yeah. It pops up in your Facebook application or your Facebook account or whatever and says, you know, we've like kind of detected you in Paris or, you know, are you okay? And mark that you're okay. And so you can click a button and then all your friends will get a notification, much like they receive when they get a message or whatever, like, you know, a status update or a comment or something on it. And it'll just let them know that you're all good.
That's cool.
You're all good. So,
but then does that create the fear with the people that haven't done that for maybe they're just asleep in bed? And then you got people back in Australia freaking out because they didn't tap "Are you okay?" and everyone else did.
I suppose
and you just forgot about it.
I suppose it could introduce that sort
of
fear.
I guess you've got to look at the positive side of things. It's good. It lets people know that you are safe. But
yes. There's been a bit of backlash.
You think if these attacks or anything bad happens and you have a relative over there, you'd think the last thing you're doing is like just browsing Facebook.
Yeah,
if you didn't know this feature was a thing, you'd be trying to call them and contact them.
You'd be just
scrolling on Facebook. But I suppose if people do know that's a thing, maybe they'll jump on Facebook to see if you're okay.
Given how so many people use social media so many times in a day, it's just become another one
it's
of
bad.
Those communication
platforms. Did you see
that article
that says you live longer if you don't use Facebook, basically, the gist of it? It was.
No, but I get the sentiment.
Yeah.
You're worrying less about things
Facebook is like bad. There's this like a study done that concluded it was bad for whatever reason. Look it up yourself.
Yeah, look it up
yourself. I can't remember anything about it, but so, it was just one of those. I felt like it was a very sort of clickbaity headline, so I kind of just didn't.
So this feature was activated over the attacks.
Yeah. You were telling me this is the first time they've done it for something that wasn't a natural type disaster.
Yes, it's previously only been used for natural disasters, so like earthquakes, floods, fires, etc. And given the fact that they've only used it for those sort of events, they were a little bit hesitant to activate it initially and then activated it and then got backlash and from people saying, well, why didn't you activate it for this event and that event?
Yeah, but come on.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
Retroactive backlash.
Exactly. The Mr. Facebook himself, Mark Zuckerberg, responded on his Facebook page and said, well,
why didn't he respond on his Google Plus page? What?
Who uses Google Plus?
Yeah.
He responded on his Facebook page and he said, well, guys, you know, this feature is only a year old. We've only used it for these sort of disasters before. We're not overly sure about what we should and shouldn't be activating it for at this point. And it's still a manual process that is approved by a group of people, like a team, before it actually happens. You know, maybe we can do it with the benefit of hindsight better in the future. But these have been events that have tested us even.
So I wonder, do you reckon moving forward they might this be a thing? But then who determines what, like, is it as, you know, does this event equate to activating the feature? Or do they just blanket activate it across anything that happens?
Yeah.
Like,
Maybe
if you could activate it yourself anytime, you could let your friends know you're okay. Maybe like you tripped over on the sidewalk. Like, it's okay, guys. I'm okay.
I'm okay. I'm fine.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they would only activate it for really major events. So, yes. Like that sort of thing, like the Paris one. Or, for example, if the majority of the state of Western Australia, for instance, there's big fires over there at the moment. If it was it was taking up, say, 40% of the state over a day, maybe they might activate that because it's, you know, wanting to find out where people are up
you
to.
You need, like, eyes all over the world. Like, do you reckon they'd just focus on US?
It wouldn't be just US alone. It'd be any developed country. But then if it's only developed countries, then you're leaving out other areas again.
You could never get everything.
You're not going to get
everything. How do you determine what, like, are you going to activate it for people in, like, Middle Eastern countries that are kind of always in danger, or, like...
There's so many questions if you start saying, well, why did you activate it for that one and not for that one?
Yeah, well, I didn't even know it was a feature until now, and I think it's a good idea.
It is a good idea because there's so many people using online as a way of communicating these days.
Especially I don't know what happens when you use it because we've never seen it happen.
No, we haven't seen it.
I don't know anyone that has used it. But I wonder if, like, if I just had my phone here, it would actually give me a notification that says this person's okay in my notification menu without having had to go into the app. Because that would be more handy than just waiting for me to browse Facebook. I'd get a pop-up straight away being like, I'm okay.
I think it would if you had push notifications turned on. I don't actually have push on, so I...
Do you have push-ups?
Push-ups. Push-downs. Yeah. Actually, I do have push notifications activated, but not for everything, though.
So it's
for
standards, is it the Are You OK feature? Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Does it have a special
name? I guess it's got a name.
The Are You OK?
I've not looked into
Facebook
what the name
Are You
is.
OK?
Are you okay, mate?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Are you okay?
I'm okay.
Good day. Good day.
I wonder if you could see maybe like a dedicated, I was going to say a dedicated app, but then everyone would need the app.
Yeah, we don't want that. We don't want that. Facebook already has segmentation in applications.
We'll stick with Facebook.
You look at that. Facebook app. Facebook has a Messenger app.
Yes.
Facebook has a Pages app. And then they've got...
It's like Google, though. Like,
I hear they've actually got other apps for other features.
Freaking 20 individual Google apps for each of their individual services.
I don't want that many applications.
Just give me, like, Google Online or something. It's like...
Yeah, an all in one, you know.
YouTube Red, Google Play Music, Google Play Newsstands.
Yeah, open up a side tab and there's all of them. And you just pick them based
Google
on what you want to do. That's how I'd like it.
Absolutely everything. So Facebook isn't as bad as Google. Maps, Street View, they separate Maps and Street View into a separate app.
Did they?
So there's a dedicated Street View app.
Oh,
like,
Lord.
Why was that ever integrated into Maps? You got Play Music, Play Movies and TV. You can consolidate movies, TV and music into one. Play Books, Play Newsstand.
Newsstand
so combine
and
those
books.
Two together. Yeah. You got Play Games as well. And then you've got all the, you know, like YouTube Red, Drive, Keep, all those other ones. But like, there's so many apps there that are just like separate that you could... Put it under sort of one name.
It's all a little bit ridiculous.
Gah,
it's
gah,
all a little bit ridiculous, gah, I must say.
Keep the headlines going.
Keep the headlines going. Next? Keep the headlines going. Let's keep it in
Lots
the technology books and complete technology. So because we're using these devices for so many hours of the day, I mean you...
Smartphones, smartwatches.
You wake up with a mobile phone in your hand to check to see what's going on Facebook or check your text messages. You get to work, you use a computer screen. In my situation here in this studio, I've got two to the right of me and two to the left of me.
And your smartphone in front of you as well.
Yeah,
your Surface off to the side. So
I've got the watch.
One, two, three, four, five, six, watch, seven with your Surface. So seven in front of you.
And so you're looking at that all day.
Seven. That's insane. Let's just take a moment to think about that.
Seven screens.
Seven monitors.
Seven screens. I've always wanted three on my desk, but no more. And then you go home and you watch TV and you're sort of looking down at your phone as well.
We don't watch TV, we watch Netflix.
Think about all these blue screens you've got in your face all day. And then you go to bed and you're looking at the phone before you go to bed. And I'm guilty of doing that. I'll sit there for like half an hour looking at the phone.
Yeah, I think most people do.
What you are doing is gradually wrecking your sleep pattern. You're not getting the melatonin building in your system.
Is there a drug we can take to supplement that? Because I don't want to give up my monitors.
Sleep is what you need.
Yeah.
You need dark periods to build the melatonin. And what they're saying is all these blue screens in our face is reducing the amount of hours that we can get
or
to generate melatonin.
Are we building a tolerance after all these years and evolving to a more superior race? I like to think that.
I don't appear to be.
I think we're evolving. Our kids will be, all, they'll be, if it's not blue light, they'll be going blind. Like, they'll be, it hurts my, it's orange, it hurts my eyes.
So,
what is this natural light? Oh.
So it'd be great to be able to just turn them off completely and have a certain amount of hours of sleep. Yes,
you're crazy.
But we don't. The reality of it is we're not going to do that.
Never.
So what they're suggesting is like...
Live by the monitor, die by the monitor. That's what I say.
Like what they're doing on Windows with a piece of software called Flux.
Being Flux.
Flux.
Flux. Yes.
Flux. Because it's got a dot there.
I know, but like who's it's a lot of effort. That's why we have
acronyms. It's a lot of effort. Yeah. So essentially what this Flux application does, I'm going to call it Flux. It adjusts your color settings.
Yeah, it's great.
And your brightness settings to be able to account for the different times of day.
Now, I use this because
I do too.
First thing in the morning, it's just like you straight out of bed and then like you're still kind of waking up. Because I'm a bit of a, I sleep in. So it's probably not true for some people, like morning people, they get up and they're used to it. They're like, I'm pretty much straight out of bed. And like the last thing I need is like a super bright monitor. It's like blinding me and hurting my eyes. So I put the color temperature way down to something a bit like more easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
And the cool thing with that program is it'll mirror the day. So in the day, it'll be kind of like, it'll match. If it's kind of dark outside, it'll give you a low color temp. And then as it gets... this brighter, it'll brighten up
your
monitor, and then it'll go back a bit, not dimmer, but just change the color temperature to like a more orangey, more pleasing and satisfying color temperature to the eye and the brain and everything. But I don't even have windows, so it doesn't even matter. So
but,
I don't see the outside.
But overall, it always keeps it in a healthy color tone.
Yes,
like
correct.
It's not
the time
that,
of day.
It's not that standard old.
It's beautiful.
What is it? 47K? 4700K that most of the monitors usually use by default, which is, you know, it
so it's
works.
It's like a very like white or like clinical sort of light.
Yeah.
And you're out more you're outside, you're like your tungsten, like 56K or something like that is a lot.
Mm.
Is what we're used to as human beings, our eyes.
5,000K.
That's warm.
That's warm. That's warm. Standard is 6,500.
So what's cool?
9,300.
Oh, wow.
So that's standard, and then we're just looking at a monitor here, and then cool is all blue. It's completely
that's
blue.
I was going to say Matrix. Matrix is green.
It's no good for your eyes.
No. So Flux, you can install it on your computers, and can you get it? I think you can get it for Android.
You can get
possibly.
It for Android. They were trying to do it for Apple, but Apple
what
have
do
objected.
They do now, Apple?
Apple have objected the way in which they went about
they
doing it.
Because we didn't implement it. We don't want it on our phones. And then the iPhone 7 now with color temperature mode to help you sleep better at night. Scumbags.
Well, that's what sleep experts would like anyway. Someone
that would be cool to have a built-in.
Bring this idea in.
Yeah. Oh.
It'd be good for your eyesight overall because so many eyes are wrecked just looking at computer screens all day. So many people over the years, over the decades, have had to get glasses or get contacts or something from persistent screen time.
Yeah, you should always look away for a bit.
You
and take
should,
a break and focus on something far away.
At least once an hour, they reckon, and to look, you know, to a faraway object and sort of focus on that and give your eyes something else to sort of work on for a little while and give yourself a couple of minutes at least, at minimum.
Maybe give yourself
to be able
an
to do
eye
that.
Massage.
Because we're in these lovely palatial studios, this used to be where I used to do my on-air shift. And so every hour, if I couldn't get out of here, I'd just open the blind a bit because we've got the wonderful view of the monument.
It should be an OHS regulation, I think. Everyone has to have, if they're working with monitors 8 hours a day, there has to be an object they can focus on at least 100 metres away. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. So we got that beautiful monument up the top of the hill there, and I used to just go and look up there.
Lovely.
Or all the houses around the hills, I used to look around those as well. And that gave me...
Have a peek into people's windows. Is that what you were trying to do?
I don't have binoculars. Well, not here anyway.
They're at your desk.
So, chronic.
Flux. Get on board if you can. Try it out. It's good for your eyes. Or just not use the device before you sleep. But that's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting impossible these days.
It is impossible.
We go to sleep with it.
I cannot sleep without it. I'm dependent.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'll tell you something which wrecks my sleep while we're on this topic.
Yeah.
TV. If I go to bed, say, for instance, my Monday habit on a couple of Mondays, and I've wrecked myself doing this, has been go for a shower before 8:30 when Four Corners is on, watch Four Corners, then watch Media Watch, and then watch 10 minutes of Q&A.
You've just described pretty much like every 55-year-old dad out there. So,
and then I've gone... No, I hate these people arguing about this topic. So I'll go to sleep. You turn the TV off. You spend about 5 or 10 minutes laying there, and then you go, "Damn it, I can't go to sleep because I've been watching TV for the last hour or so."
And the only cure is more TV.
No, it's not. I have to get up. I have to physically get up because if I don't, I will lay there for another hour or more and not have any sleep activity at all, and it'll spoil me completely. So I get up and get on the computer and look at more blue screens.
So you need Flux. Or
yes.
F.Lux.
I'll leave you with one more. A great little medical dressing for a cure. Because, you know, wound infections are pretty horrible things to have.
Yes.
And in some cases, depending upon what's happened to your body, you can't actually take the dressing off to go and detect what's going on under there.
Maybe it's like, required to hold an injury in place or something.
Yes.
You have like a cast or something.
And so in those situations, doctors are sort of applying a broad spectrum of antibiotic just to try and treat
one size fits
all possible causes. Yeah. And you know, it's not the most ideal way of doing it because you can, if you get enough of that in your system, you end up, you know, wrecking your immunities and what have you.
Yeah, unbalances like your whole body, and it not only kills the bad bacteria, but good as well.
Yeah.
Antibiotics wipes it all out. So.
Yeah. Some researchers in the UK at Bath University have actually been working.
Bath.
Have been working on a product to identify bacterial infections. And it comes in the form of, you know, those clear bandages you can get?
Yeah.
They're meant to be like waterproof and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. So they got like bandages like that.
That's handy. They developed a waterproof bandage.
And on the top surface that goes through the clear.
It's an LCD monitor so you can watch Netflix.
Netflix while you're
recovering. Or it's a smart watch. Beep, 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 beep. It'll give you like a countdown clock. It's like time until healed.
So the wad of fabric that usually touches the
smart
infection
fabric
has got a dye in the top layer, and it can sense based on what toxins are being released from the wound as it's starting to heal. It can detect the infection and start colouring up, and coloured spots come up on the dressing.
So the colour would be dependent on what type of infection or how the severity maybe.
Yeah.
And then the doctor can look at that and match it up on his old smart fabric colour chart and be like, you need X antibiotic.
So then, you can treat more effectively.
So I'm looking at this one. It's got yellow dots all over it. What does that mean? He's infected and he's going to be a zombie soon.
He's infected. That's all I know.
There's no saving him. Chop it off.
So
that's cool, though.
Yeah. They've actually recently been awarded $2 million by the Medical Research Council in the UK to be able to effectively test it. And, you know, these sort of things are good because they're not very expensive to purchase, to be able to use to improve diagnosis.
So you have your smart bandage on your arm to see when you're going to get sick. You can have your Atmo tube on your keychain to make sure you're breathing all the nice air. Man, we're going to live forever. Wait till they start injecting like nanobots in us to heal us from the inside.
Our kids are going to live forever.
They, you know, those spray cans. Sometimes you see in the movies, like if you get a, like a wound, you just spray that. Like I don't know what the
instant concept.
I don't know if you were spraying nanobots or some sort of nanotech stuff onto your wrist that would then heal your wound for you. Just like, I don't know, man. Maybe we'll make it to like 60. You never know. Like tech moves so quick, so. But, I mean, by the time it gets down to consumer level, and you need to be really rich too.
I'm almost 30. So. I'm almost 30. I mean, I don't know whether I'm going to make it.
Like, look how much happened, like, from we've gone from Windows 1 to 10.
Yeah.
And
But they skipped a number.
Yeah, but man, we've gone from, like, room full of computers into, like, freaking more powerful in our pocket than probably most people's computers at home.
And we've even noticed that at work. We've gone from major satellite systems, which took two or three racks, to a handful of units in one rack, and it's not even a full rack.
Yeah, so, like, who knows, in, like, 20, 30 years, then they'll have sex bots.
They've already got sex.
Yeah, but, like, good ones. So, I mean, I don't think we're going to miss out on everything.
We won't miss out on everything, but I don't think I'll be good enough to be preserved forever.
Not unless you're super, super rich.
Yeah.
Unless you invent like a next Facebook thing.
Because I've already
then you can be preserved in a robot.
I reckon I've already got wrinkles and stuff there somewhere.
I'll put you in a robot.
Put me in a robot.
Yeah. Forever.
So
I think it's getting towards that time.
Yes, it is.
Play the theme song. Okay, we don't.
Okay, there isn't a theme song. It's not working.
We say this every week, but we got to get one. But
it's not working.
Sometimes
there isn't anything.
There are those little stories that maybe they don't sufficient, they don't warrant, you know, going to full in-depth dive about. It's like quick little tidbits.
Yes.
That the story's in the headline.
They are.
It's a little segment we like to call quick headlines.
Yes.
And that's when you're meant to play the, if we had one.
But we don't have one.
We don't.
Give me some quick headlines.
Quick headlines. Here we go. So inviting someone to a hangout, a Google hangout, no longer requires them to have a Google account.
Oh, that's very nice.
So that's handy.
That's very great. That's
Although
good.
I haven't really been using hangouts with video chat.
I've used hangouts on one occasion. I went to an annual general meeting online because it was easier. Yeah, it was a hangout because all the members of the association were in different cities. So rather than have a big drive to one location, they just said, let's do a hangout, which is actually legal in many incorporation acts in this country here in Australia. And not-for-profit organisations can conduct a meeting over a teleconferencing situation. So you can just have a phone chat if all of the members are there, if the quorum of the members are there.
That's
on the
handy,
phone,
especially if you don't like the people in your circle. Yeah.
If you can't deal with them other than
just pretend like you're having connection issues and off you go. Do you have some quick heads?
I'll give you a quick one.
Okay, here we go.
More music streaming services failing.
Oh,
so
no.
The latest to go under, and this is after
Spotify.
No, Spotify is in good stead.
Apple Music, it's gone under.
RDO is the service.
Never heard of them.
It was a US one. It was getting a lot of backing here in Australia from one of the metro companies.
Really?
But unfortunately, they're just not cut out, even though they've been about 7 years into the case.
Never heard of them. Unbelievable.
So they originally raised $125.7 million to operate.
It's a bit of change.
But it's all dried up now. So
damn.
Pandora is acquiring their services and some of their personnel as well.
Pandora, that used to be huge, and everyone seems to talk about Spotify.
It's Spotify and Apple
Music
these days.
Pandora used to be the go-to. That's what it was before Spotify.
Yeah.
Now everyone's gone to Spotify, and now Apple Music, Google Music, and man, if you're not one of those guys, you're not going to survive.
Yep.
There's just no way. Speaking of one of those guys, Facebook will now offer to hide your exes from you after a breakup. So you don't have to put up with them, their photos of that maybe you don't want to see anymore.
Yep.
So it'll detect you changing your relationship status, like you're no longer in a relationship with, and it'll say, ooh.
Can we help you?
Looks like you don't want to see each other anymore. Can we hide their feed? So, but it's kind of like, one, if you've had like a bad breakup, why would you still be their friend? You like, yeah. You delete them in anger.
Yeah.
Second option would be maybe it was a good one and you still stay friends. So maybe you want to see that info. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's interesting. Hashtag mildly interesting.
Yeah, maybe they're kind of trying to stray away from the idea of serving more cease and desist notices on Facebook as one situation dictated over in the US. Let's talk tech giants once more as well. Back to Apple. Apple Pay has launched here in Australia finally, only via American Express card holders that have signed up with American Express themselves.
That's a lot of effort.
But the tech giant, well, not tech giant, research giant Deloitte has indicated that the nation's banks have already got mobile applications that are far superior to Apple's offerings. So they're saying, why not get on board with Apple Pay already? What's holding you back?
I don't know.
So hopefully Visa and MasterCard come to play and we can start using some of these NFC-based things. I don't walk around with all my credit cards in my pocket. I just put them all on my phone.
It's if you don't. But I mean, who? Most people have their wallet on them.
Yeah, but you just put your situation into play. You don't carry much cash around these days. No, you tend to use FPOS
card.
Yes,
correct. But I mean, I'll have my card on me and I can just PayWave everything, you know? Why do I want to bring out my smartphone?
You don't have PayWave.
I do now.
Oh, he's got PayWave. He's got PayWave.
Upgraded. I'll show you after. Very cool.
He's got PayWave. But like we've got an application on our phone called StoCard, which allows us to store barcodes for loyalty cards.
Yeah, so that's handy because loyalty cards, you get so many of them so often, they just junk up your whole wallet.
Less things in my wallet.
But I mean, one little bank card and, man.
I won't carry my wallet if I've got all my cards, all my loyalty cards.
Yeah, but then you need, what about if what if you got
driver's license?
Yeah, that's what you need.
Medicare card.
Scan your Medicare card in. The only thing you put.
No, that's at swipe.
Oh,
really? And I'll put in as well my donor card to show that someone runs me over on the street there.
I won't be helping you.
They can
because we're not compatible. That sounds like I was mean. They can we're take, not the same yeah, blood type.
They can take my vital organs and
oh,
and
I'll have good. Them. Bags your kidney. Google Glass, remember that was a thing? Then yeah. Not so much.
It
a
wasn't
thing.
Much of a trend.
Well, it was. It was a big thing, you know, and then they kind of died.
The battery was crap.
They decided to move on and they redistributed the team. It's called like Project Aura now or something.
Aura.
That's old news. Should have been up to speed with that already. But Google Glass team is now working on a wearable that isn't glass.
So what is it?
Yeah, that's the question. So they're thinking of maybe doing like audio only or something like that. Or like
headphones.
Like, it's such a weird. Yeah, headphones. They're like, how is this different to headphones? But it's. They like ditching the glass.
Yeah.
So like. Not like the device, but like the glass frame that you would see in front of your eye and using a wearable. But I mean, that was the cool thing about it, to have the vision right there and stuff. I mean, the biggest concern was the camera.
Mm.
So just take the camera out and still have the cool glass feature. I don't know. I still think there's something there. If they made it for like $300,
yeah,
I think a lot of people would get on board.
Yeah, they would consider the idea.
It'd be cool. But then, I mean, if you can't use it like when you're driving or you can't use it down the
what's
street.
What's the point
of
using
it? You
can't
use it in a breath. They ban it everywhere because they don't. It was such a cool idea, though.
People don't like these things.
It's like just, you know, running and to have maps up on your thing, or driving and have the map interface up there just to have a quick look, or look up the notifications and see the weather when you wait. I really like the idea.
You know,
I wish I didn't get a chance.
You know one situation they were talking about using it in? Parking inspectors.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Because all you do is look down at the license plate and then it would like register the license plate in the time. It's so many cool applications. So... I don't know. I hope something cool comes out of it. And if it doesn't, I hope I can get one at some point just to have a play with. Because I always wondered what it would look like through the bit of glass there.
And I know people who have, but I haven't myself.
Yeah, you're lucky. So here's a final bit, quick head. We were talking about streaming services.
We were talking about streaming services. So, we were talking about music streaming services.
Because I found an interesting, Adele reportedly will keep her new album 25 off streaming services.
Off streaming services.
Who does that? Now, I don't care for Adele like, she had that good song Rolling in the Deep, and that was downhill from there.
And do you get that one too? Adele Rolling in the Deep?
Yeah, like a laptop, the
yeah.
Dell.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but why in this day and age when that's where the most exposure is going to be,
yes.
the most revenue is going to be, why would you ever even think about having your music off streaming services unless it's just a ploy for media attention? And then she says, you know what? I am going to do it on streaming services. And then there's a big story about that. Adele decides to put her music on the streaming services. I call shenanigans.
I call shenanigans.
I swear it's just like a media ploy to get attention.
I'm hoping.
And I hate people doing that.
I'm hoping it's a media ploy because there's situations like Taylor Swift, for instance.
No, you're a big fan of hers, aren't you?
I don't mind some of her tunes.
She's lovely.
I just don't understand it. Like
it's all media.
They see it as losing revenue. Yes, they're not earning the revenue that they get with CDs, but. Your songs are being played on the radio, and the radio stations aren't allowed to be charged the cost of a CD every time they play your track. So why do you think streaming providers should pay the same sort of money?
Mm.
It's all about exposure. You're getting the exposure. You're getting all your interested fans. You're gaining fans via those streaming services. They're going to go and buy tickets and go to your concerts.
And
that's where you make the big dollars because you get it in the cost of the ticket sales, the cost of the merchandise.
Yes.
I just can't understand it. And then you've got people like Neil Young, who's taken all of his best hits off your primary streaming sites so you can only get his newer stuff. And he's put it on his service called Pono.
He has his own.
He does.
It's like
he does.
But his songs.
And they're high quality ones. He's got other artists on board, but it's essentially a lossless audio player, which nobody is interested in.
Hmm.
It's too expensive, and he can't even afford to keep it up. He's had to ask the people who are fans of Pono to help keep the service active,
which
is just ridiculous. What do they not see in the streaming services? Modern artists who are just starting up in this world, who are independents, are actually embracing the streaming services because they're getting their profile out there nice and easy.
Yeah, that's it.
Can't understand. Can't understand them at all.
Bloody kids.
That's a quick headlines, isn't
it? That's it. That's quick headlines for the week. Episode 1-5. Quick
one
headlines.
1-5. 1-5's done.
Done and dusted.
1-5's done. You can catch us online at techwrap.net. I'm actually contributing a lot more of my tech stories online to our TechWrap podcast Twitter handle as well.
Very nice.
So you can follow what's going on
at
on the world there.
Podcast.
Yep. Say hi.
If we had a picture of your Mo, that's where you'd find it. But we don't.
I don't have a Mo this year.
Very disappointing.
I don't have a Mo this year.
You've
got the closest thing to a Mo if you get rid of some of that.
I could shave everywhere else towards the end of the month and bring in a Mo for a day. But, I mean, if no one else is getting on board,
funny.
You kind of don't. It's not as fun. You know, if everyone doesn't get on board, it's not as fun.
We've lost the main motivational guy around this building who used to get really keen, like in our workplace. I think that's
always
where
that
it's
one
lost.
Guy that you need that spark to come from.
Maybe I need to be that
you
one
could
guy
be the
next year.
You could,
I'll be the spark
you
next
could be
year.
The spark next year, yeah. All right, do it. You're on.
Yeah.
I'll come down and visit for it.
No Mo's in the making of this podcast.
No, unfortunately.
Thank you for listening, though. Thanks for listening to episode 15. And catch us online at techwrap.net.
See you next time.